Love this podcast? Support this show through the supporter feature from Acast. It's up to you how much you give and there's no regular commitment. Just hit the link in the show description to support now.
Everyone knows therapy is great for solving problems, but getting therapy has its own problems too, like finding the right therapist, fitting into their schedule, and of course, the cost. Well, BetterHelp can solve those problems. It's totally online and built around your schedule. It's surprisingly affordable too. Connect with a credentialed therapist by phone, video, or online chat, all from the comfort of your home. Visit betterhelp.com to learn more and save 10% on your first month. That's BetterHelp, H-E-L-P.
Ready to pop the question? The jewelers at BlueNile.com have got sparkle down to a science with beautiful lab-grown diamonds worthy of your most brilliant moments. Their lab-grown diamonds are independently graded and guaranteed identical to natural diamonds, and they're ready to ship to your door. Go to BlueNile.com and use promo code LISTEN to get $50 off your purchase of $500 or more. That's code LISTEN at BlueNile.com for $50 off. BlueNile.com, code LISTEN.
Thanks for listening to Creative Control. While I have you here, please consider supporting Youth Empowerment and Support Services, otherwise known as YES. Based in Edmonton, Alberta, YES provides immediate and low-barrier overnight and day shelter, temporary supportive housing, and individualized wraparound supports for young people aged 15 to 24. They work collaboratively within a network of care focused on the prevention of youth homelessness by providing youth with the necessary supports to stabilize their housing, improve their well-being, build life skills, connect with community, and avoid re-entry into homelessness. Learn more about how to donate or otherwise support YES by visiting yess.org.
Hey, this is Adam from Toronto, and I support Creative Control because Vish is full stop one of the best arts interviewers in Canada, or anywhere in the world, really. He approaches every episode like he's known the artist for years, creating a conversational atmosphere that gets straight to the heart of the work. No one else in podcasting gets it quite right like he does, with a mixture of meticulous research, wise artistic insights, and well-humored personal connections. I proudly support Vish and Creative Control on Patreon. You should too.
To make your flexible monthly donation to Creative Control, please visit patreon.com/creativecontrol today.
John Wright is a gifted songwriter, multi-instrumentalist, producer, and one of the world's most remarkable drummers, who currently calls the village of Lund in British Columbia home. Originally from Victoria, British Columbia, Wright and his brother Rob co-founded No Means No, were vital and active between 1979 and roughly 2014, earned a loyal fan base, and because No Means No and his other bands like Hanson Brothers toured this planet just as hard as any human possibly could, they altered and enhanced punk and underground rock music right around the world. Since No Means No ceased playing together, John has worked with actual robots in the band Compressor Head, which we discussed the last time he was on this show back in 2015. After some measure of musical silence, on April 21st, 2023, he released a wonderful new album called Lifelike, attributed to his new solo venture, Dead Bob. And so John and I reconnected for a talk about things like wildfires, which, as we were speaking at the time, had just started to wreak havoc on Western Canada in the summer of 2023. We also discussed the end of No Means No and how his brother Robbie's doing these days, his own decision to move up to his cabin in Lund and build a workshop to make music, how he began working with Compressor Head and the current state of that robot rock band, what prompted him to revisit his and No Means No's musical archives to create Lifelike with a few collaborators, an update on a No Means No biography that Jason Lamb has finished writing, another update, this time about Alternative Tentacles' plans to reissue the No Means No catalog, and the sad story about why those records have been out of print in recent years, even newer music by Dead Bob, other future plans, and much more. a part of the Entertainment One Network with the support of listeners like you who follow and subscribe to this donor-driven podcast and spread the word about it, and make flexible monthly donations at patreon.com/creativecontrol, which you can do, and I appreciate you doing. It really means a lot. It's like I say, it's monthly, it's flexible, it's the primary source of revenue for all the work that goes into this podcast. So if you can, please visit patreon.com/creativecontrol and support this podcast and my work today. Thank you. With additional support from Blackbird Music, a well-stocked record store with bricks and mortar locations in Edmonton and Calgary, Alberta, and very, very friendly staff who will help you with whatever you need if you go into one of those things, or say you want to order every No Means No record or Hanson Brothers record that you can find that are still out there circulating, you know? Or eventually maybe you want to order this Dead Bob record on vinyl. Well, you can do all of those things at blackbird.ca. Just go to blackbird.ca, type in what you want, and if they can, they'll ship it right to your house wherever you live in the world. That's how it works. So thanks again to Blackbird. Again, blackbird.ca for more information. Plus, in-kind support from independent businesses like Pizza Trocadero, The Bookshelf, and Planet Bean Coffee, respectively, in Guelph, Ontario, and Granddad's Donuts in Hamilton, Ontario. This is episode 782 of Creative Control, featuring the lovely and talented John Wright of Dead Bob, with your host, me, Vish Khanna. Hi, John. How's it going?
Hello, Vish. It's going pretty good out here on the West Coast, a rainy day.
Nice. I can sort of see that on our screens here. Yes, it's rainy. I'm sorry. It's hot. Hot as hell in Edmonton, Alberta.
Yes. This week. The fires are encroaching, I understand.
Yes, it's dry and there are random fires near my house even. And it's not good news.
No. Yeah. No,
You got the fires in BC all the time too.
Oh yeah.
They impact you personally?
Even though here I live out in the woods, at the end of the road, the very end of the road. This I'm at one end of the road, and Tierra del Fuego is on the other end of the road in Chile. Yes, it's forested, and of course, you know, the weather is changing. It's a little less predictable. We've had some quite dry spells too. So, you know, it is a concern. I'm surrounded by the forest and the trees, and I actually have done some fire mitigation, of which the BC government paid me to do. That was pretty interesting.
Oh.
Well, it costs less to pay me something to try to mitigate fires than to have to dole out all the money to all the people whose houses burned down. Mm. And where I live, nobody's got insurance, so... Yeah, we're at the mercy of Mother Nature, but it's generally pretty wet around here.
Yeah. Sorry, I don't mean to dwell on it too much further, but what kind of mitigation can a human being do on their own?
Well, fire travels on the ground, not necessarily through the trees. So you do things like, and we've got a lot of cedar around here, and cedar boughs tend to hang low, and that's what sets the trees on fire when the fire catches the low-hanging boughs. And, of course, any dry vegetation that's close to your house. So you want to keep vegetation sort of trimmed and cleared and away from the house as much as possible. So you just basically... Debris.
I see.
Debris on the ground is where the fire is going to travel fastest and uphill. So, it's essentially just kind of a bit of a fire break around your house as best you can do. I mean, I'm surrounded by forest, so.
Yeah. Well, how long have you been in this? It looks very appealing, your home, from what I can see. How long have you been there?
I bought some property up here back in the 90s, but I was living down in the Lower Mainland and had kids and whatnot, and they all went to school down there in Richmond, British Columbia. But I had this property, and we built a cabin on it, a couple cabins, and I knew someday I'd be probably moving up here. And then that day arrived back in 2013.
Oh, right.
Yeah. So I moved up and I pretty much live full-time here in Lund.
I see. Now, 2013, I want to get to that just for a moment here. First of all, John, I didn't really convey this to you. I think you know this. I am a deep admirer of you, and it's always very meaningful to me, mostly for your fire mitigation skills. I want to be clear.
Yes. Yeah. Well,
that's what
maybe they'll be calling me up from Alberta.
That's what you're known for. Everyone knows this. No, I just want to say how nice and lovely it is to hear new music from you, so to speak. New music. Let's call it new music. I know we'll get into it. Some of it spans.
You know, new and old.
New and old, yeah. Yep. So I just want to say it's really meaningful to hear the album and to get to spend some time with you. The last time I saw you performing live, I wasn't a resident of Alberta yet. I lived in Ontario, but I happened to be at Sled Island in Calgary in the year 2012. Yep. And I think... forgive me, I don't have all the chronology. No Means No, the band I'm referring to that you were in with your brother Robbie and Tom.
Yes.
Tom
yes.
Holliston, the very, very funny Tom Holliston. When did you guys announce you were kind of wrapped up?
Well, we didn't really actually, like typical No Means No, it was no announcement, no, you know, farewell tours. It just kind of happened. Our last show... actual show that the three of us banging it out was in Germany in June of 2013 at the AU Fest in Frankfurt, which was this old squatted house, big squatted apartment that we had actually never played in that building, but always played in Frankfurt and stayed out there. And the people that lived out there organized the shows and mm-hmm. were always very lovely. Although, actually, hang on, I think the Show Business Giants played in their basement. I stand corrected. Okay. No Means No didn't, but they every year they put on a festival in basically their backyard and would get, it was a big piece of land, we'd get 1,500 or 2,000 people out every summer. Hmm. And that was we finally, after 20 years, we finally played it, and it was awesome, and that turns out to have been the last show. Hmm. Apart from in 2014, we did a sort of an unplugged thing in Victoria for the Western Canadian Rock and Roll Hall of Fame. Hmm. But that was, you know, we played four songs in a kind of no drums and whatnot. Hmm. But we were kind of just taking a break, really. And then my brother just decided that he'd kind of had enough of traveling in vans and staying in hotels. He had a young family. He didn't have kids until well into his 50s. And then he had some health issues. It seems like bad hips run through our family. Huh. And he felt he wasn't physically and mentally really up to it. Huh. And so he basically, after about a year or something, said, look, I think I'm done. And he was. I don't think he's picked up his bass since.
Yeah. That sounds...
However, yeah. He has actually taken up the guitar again, trying to learn how to do finger picking.
Oh, lovely. Just for the love of it. Just for the love of playing.
Yeah. John Fahey?
Sure.
So, and he did actually mention a few months ago that he's been thinking about songwriting again, but not really in terms of No Means No. Plus... towards the end, he really wasn't into guitar rock and roll really much and was fully into dubstep, electronic music and whatnot.
Yeah.
So, yeah, he just was kind of moving on from that.
Yeah, okay. So I fixated on 2013, wondering if your move to your cabin area, your land, was precipitated by a feeling you might have that No Means No was slowing down. But it sounds like that's a coincidence. You didn't really know that
it was more or less a coincidence. Yeah.
Okay. And sorry, just because I love him very much, how's Rob doing? Is he doing okay?
He's doing fine. Yeah. He's doing fine. Again, his kids are a little older now, of course, I think his son, the eldest, is just gone into grade. He's in grade 8 now.
Holy Lord! Really? Wow! I guess time is flying. Yeah.
Okay. Yeah, and he's now taller than everyone else in the family. And their young daughter is in grade, I guess, 6.
So nice.
And doing really well. And yep, he's pretty much a homebody.
Yeah, that's great. Well, I mean, that's great to hear. And I guess I want to get into the decision-making process for you when Robbie said, I think I'm done. What was your first impulse? Oh, sorry. I know the answer to this because the last time you were on the show, we talked about compressor head, the robot work. And to be to be honest, when I heard that the album was called Lifelike, I'm like, oh, is that a reference to the animatronic robots that John was working with? Is there a coincidence there?
One of the many connections and threads running through the whole process. No, well, not in particular, but yeah. Yes, moving up here, the one thing that happened is my kids stayed down in the Lower Mainland with their mother, and I was living in this cabin up here, but I was living by myself for the first time in my life. Hmm. So, you know, I had a lot of time on my hands and started to write a lot of music or started to work on a lot of music, old and new. And then very shortly thereafter, I think it was actually in 2014, that I was contacted by, this fellow named Frank Barnes from Berlin to tell me about this compressor head idea, this robot band. And they were big fans. The bunch of them were big fans and the Hanson brothers and No Means No, but they kind of wanted this band to be like a punk rock kind of Hanson brothers style thing. Right.
Yeah.
And then, yeah, it all kind of set off from there. We talked about it. And I didn't quite understand exactly what they wanted, but they sent me a ticket to go to Berlin. So I figured they were serious.
Serious people send plane tickets to people.
Yeah, serious people send plane tickets. And and that started I guess it was actually late in 2013 because it was about 4 years to complete it and get the album recorded and play the first show, the album release, and that was in 2017 in a climbing resort in Spain.
Wow.
To be even more obscure. But that was, I was getting all my music mojo from this project, which was incredibly interesting because it really forced me to completely deconstruct rock and roll and songwriting and performance, because the robots do nothing, of course, intuitively. Everything, every minutia is programmed for them to do.
Yeah.
So, and to get them to sound like they're not a bunch of robots, that they're like a punk rock band, it was quite the process of how to massage their programming and the limitations and advantages of how they played their instruments, because they were engineered to play actual instruments, not the other way around. Mm-hmm. The drum set was a little bit strangely widely positioned, but it was a regular drum set. The bass had a bit cut off for a sliding arm, so just for the ergonomics of the arm of the robot, of the bass player. Guitars were completely untouched. They're just mounted and on the robot. So the idea was, you know, that it was a robotic punk rock band that didn't really know they were robots.
Right.
So that was an amazing process. And in the end, I was really happy and really proud. And that record, Party Machine, I think turned out awesome. It was a hell of a fun thing to do.
And so you're talking about it in the past tense. Is that done?
Yes, of course. Then the humans were the very ironic because the guitar player decided independently from this other fellow, Frank, a fellow named Marcus. He was living in Hamburg and he had friends in bands, and they'd play a show. And then after the show, instead of like enjoying the fact that they'd play a show, they'd argue. And he was like, it's just like, why aren't you just happy that you're able to go and play music and all this? Oh, well, you know, if it was just robots, then there would be no people arguing. Well, as it turned out, very ironically, of course, it was the people that argued, and there was a falling out with the human members of the band.
Oh.
So they didn't get too much past the record release party, and discord set in. So,
yeah.
But Frank has retained all the name and all that, and he controls the drummer and the singer and the bass player, all his robots. Marcus has gone on his way with his two guitar player robots. So, but Frank is still working on it. He has to build a guitar robot himself, and just his life and all the things he's had to do, it hasn't happened yet. But I talked to him recently when the Dead Bob record came out, and they're at it. He's going to do some shows with a canned guitar. But yeah, he's bound and determined to get the thing going again.
It's weird. As you're speaking about all of these people, it sounds like you're both talking about like middle-aged scientists and small children. You know, yes. They took their robots and they went home. They're like, I don't want to play with you anymore. And you're like, okay, that's weird. And then there's going to be robot side projects, dueling robot bands.
Well, I always thought they should, you know, those the robot wars, you know, these events that happen in the hockey arenas, and they have that should be the band that's entertaining the crowd.
Absolutely.
Probably a huge money maker.
As always, I found it really fascinating, and so it sounds like your involvement is at least minimal for now, but maybe you'll return. I don't know. I can't quite tell.
Yeah. We'll see. If I get back working with these guys again, I would obviously if the opportunity was there. I haven't got any new music for them, but you know, whatever.
I'm part of a No Means No Facebook group. And I saw that you were talking about putting something out, and you were wrestling with what to call it and the new project and all these things. But we were all very excited to. I don't go on the Facebook very often anymore. I will confess that to you, but I get these little updates. Anyway, you start the. I think you announced. I don't even know how it came about. How did you end up calling the thing Dead Bob again? Do you want to just talk about that real quick?
Well, that was an extremely frustrating and annoying process, in the sense that I've been thinking about getting this together for a couple of years, and I've been working on the music for a long while. COVID, like so many other people, gave me some time to focus on it, because I also subsequently bought a pub in 2017, and it pretty much entirely took over my life. And COVID was... a bit of a relief. So I got very busy on working, putting real drums down on songs that had programmed drums and loops that I'd built music on. And I started replacing the drums, and just in my workshop here, right there. Oh, I should say also, because I built this workshop and realized that I could put my drums in there. And I haven't had my drum set up where I lived, I don't know, since 1985. No, there was 1 year in Vancouver in 1994, I think, that I was living in a house and we were practicing in the basement for 1 year. And I moved out.
Same.
My drums stayed there. So my point is that here I can set my drums up. I can start playing again, and haven't done really much playing at all since No Means No Stop Playing.
Yeah.
Done a few little jamming things, but certainly my own drums had not been set up since 2013. So I got at it and started realizing I was getting results that I liked. And so that set me down the road of finishing old songs and writing new songs and just getting all this archives in order. And then I was like, okay, well, I think I can put something out. And it never occurred to me that I could not find a name that wasn't taken. What was I going to call myself? I was going to call myself Nope. To begin with. And then I was like, oh, then this major theatrical release was coming up. And then I looked, and then that's when I started looking at names. I started Spotify. Okay, search artist. Oh, there's like 15 artists named Nope. Okay, Mr. Wright. I'll be Mr. Wright. That'll be a good name. R-I-G-H-T. Now there's a whole bunch of them.
Yeah.
And every idea I came up with, I'd look and it's like, there's already, if not one, two, 10 bands by these names. It's like, oh my God. And then you just start getting kind of frustrated, because you realize you're not picking a name because you're excited about it. You're just trying to pick a name that someone else doesn't have.
Yeah.
So it was like, oh my, I just didn't anticipate that.
Yeah.
But our old sound man, Craig Bougie, who now lives here in Powell River, actually moved up a couple of years ago, He had suggested early on that I call myself Dead Bob. And then so I revisited it. And I came up with the 3 - 2 = 1, which was very clever, also suggested by Craig and his wife. But yeah, it was a little maybe too clever and a little too much of an in joke. And on the surface of it, it's not that exciting. So
yeah.
So that's how I ended up with Dead Bob. I thought, you know, Dead Bob's not bad. It's of course, you know, all the 99.9% of the people who'd be interested in hearing this are No Means No fans.
Yeah.
And that's how I'm going to get the word out. And, you know, it's pointless not to, you know, talk about and reference to the band that my entire reputation is based on. So
yeah.
I am not and don't want to be No Means No 2.0.
Yeah.
But, you know, of course I'm going to acknowledge my past. And then in the end, I thought, oh, that's actually a pretty good name. It's a tip of the hat to No Means No, but it can, you know, I can do anything under that name.
Yeah.
It doesn't lock me into something. So
nice. I appreciate that. I don't normally ask people about where their names came from, but I saw your frustration in your post. Like, the record's done. I just don't know what to call this stupid thing. What the hell? And so I thought that was kind of funny, but I appreciate that it was also very frustrating for you. So let's get into the chronology of the songs if we can. You know, this is a bit of a complicated thing compared to some artists who are like, yeah, in 2020, I went in and recorded 12 songs and now they're out. It's 2022. This is a bit of a temporal mishmash. Is that a fair way of putting it?
Yeah, right off the bat, the title track is actually a remake of a No Means No song from the late 1990s. Lifelike came out on Dance to the Headless Bourgeoisie, but it came out as a bonus track on the double vinyl. So
the B-side,
and we couldn't, we couldn't really play it live anyway. It was immediately relegated to obscurity. And, but I always thought, like Robbie, like I write a lot of music for the band and all sorts of collaborations. And I wrote some lyrics, but a lot of the music that I contributed to the band that Robbie put the text to. And I always thought that was one of the best ones. Like I really thought that was an excellent set of lyrics to what I had written. And I was just and I came across the original demo that I made before there was any lyrics to it. It was all on keyboard, this on the Korg M1 little demo.
Yeah.
And the version that No Means No did, I thought was a little flat. We weren't the right band for that song in a sense. I mean, we did a perfectly good version, but it was really keyboard driven. And I thought the arrangement could be broader. And it was just one of these, this wasn't planning on releasing it. It was just, I'm going to redo this song because I just would like to hear it in a slightly different way. And when I went to do it, I talked to Selena Martin. I'd met Selena through Tom. And one of my ideas for that song, Lifelike, is that it should be sort of asexual. It's not just men singing or a man singing, but not necessarily just a woman either, but just, you know, so I wanted a choral effect and it's a duet on the record, but I wanted it to be a man and a woman. And Selena just popped in my mind. Like she's a great singer.
She's wonderful.
And I thought that would be a great voice to be on this song. And I just sent it to her and she said, yeah. And I sang her part and then she just reproduced it over in France. That's where she lives.
Oh.
And yeah, in Marseille. Where she was. She's back there now, I think, Marseille again, still.
Nice.
And yeah, and then the song started to flesh out and become something. And then, you know, eventually I went, okay, I really like this and I'm going to release it. And when I'm starting to assemble the album in my head, that's when I decided to include that song. So I didn't purposely set out to release a No Means No song, but the other song that Robbie wrote on this album, Dead Bob, was a song, again, from the same time period, the late 90s. I can't remember if we were demoing it or working on it for Dance of the Headless or for No Means No One, but it was a song we were working on, amongst others, that just didn't go anywhere. The bass line was, again, written on keyboards, and it's in the key of C, which is like a drop C on a bass is pretty messy.
Yeah.
And Robbie didn't like to detune his bass and play anyway, even drop D. And so we tried it, you know, let's just try it in the key of E and blah, blah, blah. It just never went anywhere. We had other stuff and it was just went to the wayside. But I've always had this demo of that.
This is White Stone Eyes is the song you're referring
to? White Stone Eyes, yes. Yeah, this is the second song on the record. And so I still had the words. I still had the demo. So this was one of the things I did when I moved to London. I was just sort of monkeying around with songs. And says, I'm going to kind of do it, try to demo this song and sing it.
Yeah.
So actually the singing of that song is not Robbie's. It was, we never even got that far. The way I vocalized the song and arranged the sort of chorus and verses, that's all me just basically arranging the music and making up my own way of singing it.
I think you may be aware that some folks listening to this are in this position of not necessarily being able to discern whether Rob or you are on some of these, whether or not, obviously we know you're you're on these songs, but there's some speculation like, wait, is that Rob in the background? Like, is that Rob doing something? Have you heard tell of this? Or people like,
yes, in fact, one of the first times I played that song to, I think Scott Henderson, do you know Scott Henderson?
And
Jason Lamb were over. Jason Lamb is the fellow writing the book about Nomi Snow.
Written. I see the updates on that. It's almost done, I heard. Yeah.
It is done. It's just in the process of pre-sales and all that sort of stuff. Jason Lamb is actually going to be here in the house in about 6 hours. He's coming over to visit.
Yeah. We better get this done before then.
Yes. and the three people from the No Means Nothing podcast are going to be visiting.
Oh, look at you. So this book I don't mean to derail what you were saying about Rob.
Well,
what
I was going to say was that when I played that song, White Stone Eyes, they both was, is that Robbie singing?
Yeah.
So, yes, I've heard this several times. Like, is that Robbie singing? Like, nope, that's me singing. But I don't know. There's some, I mean, I don't really know why. I wasn't trying to imitate my brother or anything. It's just kind of the way the song came out. Maybe I was vocalizing in a way that I imagined the song to be at some point, right?
Well, for those of us who follow music history and brothers or sisters in a band, doing any kind of voice blending or exchanging singing roles, it can be hard sometimes to discern one singer from the next. I know people who can't tell the Beatles apart at this point, and it's 2023. And to me, I'm like, oh, I mean, I grew up with that, so I know. But I think it's fair to say, John, that for all of us out here, you and your brother Rob are like the Everly Brothers of the punk rock movement, you know? beautiful singers with interchangeable voices. You did sing a lot on No Means No Records. I think maybe that's part of... People think Robbie did all the singing, maybe. I don't... Not No Means No people. I mean like regular people, normal people who just hear bits and pieces or assume, I think, that your brother did most of it, but... I think that's
in truth, he did do most of it. He was the lead singer of the band. Yes. But of course, Andy, for instance, back in the mid-80s, was the lead singer because my brother lost his voice for a year and a half.
Yeah.
Andy did all the singing. And Andy did a lot more singing as well as writing for No Means No than Tom did.
Yeah.
But Tom ended up singing some songs. Robbie... didn't necessarily have to sing all of the songs. And yes, I sang a few lead songs as well.
I think people are just trying to attune to the fact that this is a No Means No adjacent project.
Yeah.
And you've got some songs that date back to, or some of the songs were co-written with your brother. So I think I understand some of the confusion. What about some more recent, I know that all of it is sort of recent and that you've remade older things and gussied them up with real drums and whatnot. What's like the most contemporary song on Lifelike by Dead Bob?
I think the youngest song would be That Was Too Easy.
Ah.
I was writing actually a song that wasn't going to be a punk rock song and ended up sort of being that, but without words, I just had a melody. And which is often the case with me. I mean, this is a big roadblock for me in music writings. I'm not much of, certainly not a prolific lyricist. Mm. And, you know, I was blessed with a brother who could put words and good words to my music all those years, right?
Yeah.
And as a sidebar, that's one of the reasons why this album is the songs that it is simply because they're the ones that were finished and had the words.
I see.
So
yeah.
Yeah. Not entirely, but I did have to do lyric writing to get this record done. But that was too easy. It was a relatively recent music, I think, was actually written the music during COVID. And I've been teaming up with Ford. Ford is a very prolific lyricist, Ford Peer.
Oh, yeah, the best.
And so I'd reached out. I reached out ages ago. I've got some songs. I don't really have lyrics. Maybe you can come up with some ideas. And yeah, he's some ideas had arisen. And I'd sent him one song, and he sent me the words for it. And I listened to him and, well, the words are kind of okay, but they don't fit this music.
Hmm.
And I was right while I was writing this other song. And I realized, wait a minute, they completely fit like a glove. So it was like he sent me words for one song and I just sang them to another.
Oh,
and it worked out just fine. Yeah. It was kind of like weird, but you know, it was exciting. It was good. It was, it brought that whole song together. So that was too easy is the most current,
but not something you wrote the lyrics for. Is that what I'm able to discern?
Yes.
Yeah.
Okay. Ford wrote those lyrics, but not to that music.
So in terms of lyric writing, I get some of these songs are finished. Did you write lyrics for newer, fresher lyrics for any of the things we're hearing?
Oh, yeah. One of You was written to finish that song because it was a song I really wanted to be on the album. And I kind of knew in my head what it should be, but it took a while to try to. And you know, it's a little bit kind of quasi-Robbie in a way. It's a bit of that metaphysical content, I suppose. I don't know.
Is it a love song?
No.
I'm just trying to figure it. Okay, I can't figure it out because it does seem to be about someone specific, if I may.
Yeah, yeah. It's about sort of the world we live in, and that is, of course, completely one to ourselves because we can't live in other people's worlds, but obviously we do. So it's just kind of a paradox that, and the line that was the line that that sort of sums it up is I'm alone with you. So I'm alone, but with you.
Right.
And you're alone, but you're with me. So we're not alone, but we are alone. You know, it's this sort of idea of how we are connected to one another and that paradox in our lives. So, you know, not super overly deep, but kind of intriguing and more of a meditation, I think. And that and the song ends with a kind of a chant, which is, and actually, I should say that the last line is, I'm one of many parts of one.
Mm.
And I heard that. I think I heard it on the radio. It might even be in the CBC. I have no idea. I cannot remember in what context it was. But that line stuck in my head, and that's kind of where I wanted that song to be. And it took a long while for me to try to articulate something to go along to, you know, I'm not a psychologist or a particularly a deep philosophical thinker.
Yeah.
But the line really caught me, and I wanted to find a way of expressing it. And that song, that's how that song was born. So. Those were pretty recent lyrics, and that song was created specifically for this record, to be on this record.
You say recent, and, recent. Can you actually put a kind of time on it, a year on that one?
That music was probably written 10 years ago.
Yeah.
And the lyrics last year, I guess.
Okay. So where I'm, you can probably imagine where I'm going to go here, John. The world is the world right now. Do you feel like the world the world as it is as such? Almost paraphrasing No Means No reference with myself there. Do you think the world as it is spinning right now has influenced this particular record, your lyrics, the mood of it in some way?
Yeah, absolutely. In the sense that it's not an accident that the first line of the album is fuck this fucking shit. And the last line of the album is I'm just hanging on.
Gotta believe I'm just hanging. You gotta believe, you gotta believe, gotta believe, gotta believe I'm just hanging on. So this is a reaction. Sorry to cut you off there. I just wanted to get the lyrics right. John, if you and I get fact checked by the fact checking police on these lyrics, we'll be hell to pay. I'm sorry. I just want to be clear. No, you're saying this is reflective of personal.
That was deliberate. Yeah. That opening line and that closing line, that was deliberately arranged to bookmark the record.
It's a frustrating and angry time. And those of us who are, mingling with our fellow humans, it's a weird time. But we also, those of us who are doing so, often try to find respite and joy and happiness. And that to me is a perfect time for a band like No Means No. To be around or for us to dig into their music. Because I always think you guys captured those things, those extremes. The doom, the frustration, but also the fucking everything's ridiculous and absurd. Let's have a laugh. So I just want to commend you on that. Like right now is a weird time and I'm trying to – I have both at a heightened level of like frustration, but what the hell? Everything doesn't make any sense. So do you – I'm not saying you guys were fortune tellers, soothsayers, but I'm just saying it's a nice time to listen to Dead Bob and to ponder No Means No. Does that make sense to you?
I think that as this time is progressing here from the 80s till now, I think that people are being more and more and more and more forced to look at themselves and to try to understand like what part of this world are. What is their part in this world?
Yeah.
But forced also because you can't avoid the world and the make-believe worlds that we live in, it's harder and harder to detach yourself from what's going on. I mean, I guess that's always been the case, but it just seems to be the world is starting to close in on everyone more than it did. I mean, when I grew up, there was, of course, you know, the nuclear winter was the big fear.
And a cold war, literally a cold war. Yeah. Like, I mean, sorry, not literally, but a cold war. Yeah.
And a nuclear annihilation was this sort of really the first truly human existential problem.
Mm-hmm.
And it has only become more complicated than that. Shall we say. And I think just people are more having to face themselves and having to face the world, and they can't hide from these things anymore. And I think No Means No always, Robbie was, you know, he looked into himself and then had the ability to express that to people.
Yeah.
And so I think I think that's maybe what you're touching upon is that No Means No was already in the process of doing what people are doing these days.
Yeah.
What we all should do. I mean, Robbie once said, everyone should go see a therapist for a year. Whether you think you need it or not, just go talk to someone and be very surprised what comes out of you. So I think discovering ourselves as humanity is now even more pressing.
Yeah.
At least it feels that way. I mean, it doesn't necessarily will turn out that way, but it feels that way. I think it feels that way more than it did 50 years ago.
Yeah. I appreciate your perspective on it. I will say that as I was listening to this record, like we've acknowledged that it is sort of temporarily a little bit all over the place. Sorry, we've fixated on the late 90s and then we've talked about some current stuff. But you've also, I think, made allusions to like, well, that song, the music is 10 years old. So we're still in that temporal weirdness, I think, with the Dead Bob record that the first thing we've heard here. But a song like No Tomorrows, aesthetically and sonically, really stands out for me. Too, like I think I'm hearing acoustic guitars. I think I'm hearing like a different vocal delivery. I think does that resonate with you?
Oh yeah, that song is definitely the oddball stylistically. Yeah. Again, written 10 years ago, maybe 2014. It was one of those songs that was born and created in that time when I first moved here and was in a very productive, creative time in my life. I had all this time alone and the robots were all part of that as well. I went on quite a binge of songwriting and that was one of the songs. It was actually quite, it was complete. The words and the music all came at the same time, which is really rare for me.
Yeah.
And it was also one of the songs that I was still learning how to write on GarageBand. And
I see. Yeah.
And so it was GarageBand was this huge kind of creative inspiration too, learning to write on it and do stuff on it. And that song just kind of came out. And that's why on the record, I leave the drum loop that I used. That drum loop I fucked with a little bit, but I left it there because that's That's the original demo. What you hear off the top of that song is the original demo, except my son Aiden played some acoustic guitar for me.
I see. Okay.
And then I had a digital horn part for that song, which was very happy. The a woman, Christy Liaudette, who plays in a band called Wrong, R-O-N-G, from Vancouver.
Oh, weird.
Yeah, she's partners with Byron Slack from Invasives.
Ah.
And they've been together for a couple of years. And she's a very talented multi-instrumentalist as well. And she plays guitar, keyboard, sings, and plays the horn, trumpet, cornet. And that's the only song on this album. But the next album has probably three songs that have horn arrangements. I write a lot of horn arrangements, which is really will be different from No Means No fans. You know, there's been a few horn, quote unquote, parts on some No Means No releases.
Yes.
Digitally. You know, my dream would be to have a horn section live that I would play with.
Oh, cool.
So she replaced the digital horns on that demo. Yeah. And then I brought the live drums in and a live bass guitar in for the second half of the song. So,
yeah.
But what you hear off the hop, that was the sound of, and the singing. The singing, too, is the same. Hmm. I may have replaced one or two lines, but it's essentially what I sang. And it's why maybe it sounds a little strangely delivered to you. Because
hey, don't put this on me. I'm just saying. I didn't say it was strangely delivered.
No. It sounds strangely delivered to me as well. Some people say it sounds like Ween. They go, like Ween.
You have identified it as an oddball on the record. And I agree. And I've highlighted it because it does stand out. When you're thinking about the fan, you're very, I think you'd probably agree, John, the No Means No fan base is a pretty loyal one and accepting.
Oh, yeah. And I've discovered.
yeah, exactly. So does it give you any apprehension to put a song like this out at all at this point? Like, I wonder if people are going to think this one's really the rest of it, and it could be argued, like when Just Breathe comes on and you scream, fuck this fucking shit. Those of us who are attuned to what you've been doing are like, oh yeah, okay, here we go. This is going to be like No Means No, or this is in that spirit. By the way, you mentioned Byron Slack. I believe he plays on that song among some other ones.
Yeah, that is co-written with Byron.
My point being, are you've got to probably be at this point in your life not scared to present people with things they might be surprised by. Is that a fair way of looking at this?
Oh, yeah. No, it's never been a consideration, even for No Means No. Although we had a certain style, our live shows were always this energy that were there. And there was always the, for the people who just wanted that punk rock energy and volume, it was always there. But we never purposely set out to write songs to sound like No Means No.
Yeah.
They did because we are who we are.
Yeah.
But if you listen to the songwriting over the course of our albums, it's really all over the place. And also, you know, my time, I've been playing music with Tom for God forever too, before he was in No Means No. Mm-hmm. And his band, which is primarily his music, the Show Business Giants, was purposely like all over the map all the time.
Yeah.
And that was kind of the idea, was just, you know, just taking different genres and Show Business Giants was also a lot of goofy and funny and teasing and parody. But that idea of mixing styles and is always been there from the very, very beginning. Yeah. So this is no different. And that's why I say, like, Dead Bob is not necessarily No Means No 2.0. The next album, which is pretty much already well on its way, I've already got the song order. I know what I have to finish some stuff.
Yeah.
Well, like I say, I was working on a huge archive of music that this first album is just kind of what I finished.
Yeah.
And what I wanted to finish to make an album.
Yeah.
But other songs are well on their way, or some, you know, more than others. But yeah, the next album is already in my mind what it'll be. And it's going to be a little bit different in that respect. Mm. There'll be more of the, not necessarily the style of No Tomorrows, the song you're referring to, but the idea that it's not necessarily, it'll be a little less No Means No-ish, I guess, in the sense that A, they're won't be a song on it that Robbie wrote.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Just that it gives this first album a little bit of that feel, right? So I am not to answer your question, it doesn't occur to me that I need to write a kind of song.
Good. Yeah. No, I mean, sorry, not good. I know this about you, but I just want to clarify because when you yourself say that's the oddball, I don't think you're self-conscious about it, but you're conscious of it. Okay, this is going to be a bit different for the people who know what I do. Let's see how they... And I assume the reception in general has been pleasant. You're pleased with what people have been saying about Dead Bob?
Yeah, well, the detractors have not made themselves known, so the reviews have been all good.
No, that's great. And I'm happy to hear you're already work on the next thing. You referenced this archive. I have to ask, is it because you've been making music for so long? Is it an archive that spans the entirety of your music making life, or is it from a certain period that you're digging into?
No, I think I'm not digging back to like the 80s or the 70s.
Sure. Okay.
So these like White Stone Eyes was a very old song, and of course Lifelike was a remake from that period.
Yeah.
A lot of the stuff I'm working on now is there is a few little things from back around then when I was doing demos that weren't even necessarily for No Means No.
Yeah.
Whether they see the light of day, I'm not sure. But a lot of what I'm working on now is relatively in the last 20 years.
Okay, cool.
And I'm now, you know, getting to that point like, okay, I got another album together that I want to do. But I'm also thinking, you know, I've started been playing around with some new stuff as well. So there's stuff that's I just started writing in the last, you know, 2 years.
Now, the Dead Bob record, Lifelike, is currently available digitally. Are you planning on some sort of physical release?
Yes, I am. There's a bit of a glitch in the works right now as far as getting vinyl and CDs out. But I definitely want to. And it looks like in Europe, I really need to have a label.
Oh, okay.
To do this, and I'm trying to figure out how to get a band together and play. I obviously would like to play with Byron and Ford and Christy and my business partner here, Colin McRae. He played in a band called Pigment Vehicle for years.
I saw that band. I saw them in Guelph, Ontario, I think.
They've been across the country. They were a really crazy, weird band. Yeah. That were extremely challenging to the average listener.
Yeah.
But very technical music and
I remember us liking them. I think they played I'm pretty sure it was them that played in a basement at a house I eventually, if not was living in Guelph. So yeah, I remember them.
Yeah. No, they were doing their thing and getting out there and playing.
Yeah.
Anyway, Colin, I didn't know him well back then. He's probably 10 years younger than me, I guess. Mm-hmm. Anyway, but we played a couple of shows together and I knew him. I was acquainted with him and Craig Vishak, Jason, the drummer Jason. Of course, we were all from Victoria. But I didn't get to really know him until I moved up here. And he had already moved up here. He had long since stopped playing music, and he lived in the Kootenays in the mountains there for a while. Then he moved to Powell River, and he was getting stuff going here. And so when I moved up, it was somebody I knew here. Mm. And I have since gotten to know him much better living up here. And then we went on. I helped him build a coffee shop. And then we eventually became partners in this pub together with some other fellas. And so recently he's been like, I want to play music again.
Oh, nice.
And so he's essentially, so I'm your new bass player.
Oh, cool.
So, we haven't actually jammed. We did play in another band together, but we were double drums. He played drums and so did I, local band, with actually Craig Vishak from Pigment Vehicle, who also lived here for several years. And that was lots of fun. So he's going to play bass, and if I can get these other folks to play, that will be awesome. People have, of course, their lives and their jobs, and we're not all 20 years old anymore and can just run off and do stuff.
Yeah.
I think Ford is pretty much on board and ready to do something different. So, you know, as with No Means No, our main audiences, at least the larger numbers and the money was mostly in Europe. And to get back to what I was saying about hard copy, that we need somebody over there really to, you can't service Europe from here. So I'm looking into that and also looking into probably just getting a label to do. I mean, there's alternative tentacles. I haven't approached them. There's other labels that I've been thinking about, thinking maybe this is just better to get that all rolling.
Yeah.
So it's digitally out there streaming. I had a great response on Bandcamp.
No, it's great. Yeah.
Awesome. Yeah. Lots of people buying the digital download. I guess I'm up over 30,000 listens. So in the first couple of weeks, that's awesome. It's been really, really, it was a long time coming. It was very frustrating for me to get this all done, but it was very satisfying that people have been, lots of great response, lots of people really happy.
Good. Well, I'm happy for you, John, and on behalf of happy fans, thank you. We're happy.
Well, you're very welcome.
It means a lot. You referenced Jason Lamb's book about No Means No. Some of us have been trying to figure out what's going on. You also just referenced alternative tentacles. Some of us have been wondering what the hell is going on with this reissue campaign that may or may not be happening with No Means No stuff.
That's been very, it's in the works. Like AT, it's like, you know, I said, you just guys go ahead. This is several years ago to just reissue all the back catalog. And, during COVID, of course, things were difficult and the vinyl is very difficult. It's getting easier now, but there's no more record pressing plants out there. Very few. They're all boutique things. And then suddenly, Adele wants her record out on vinyl and there's a 2-year backlog trying to get things pressed. So I think that's all clearing up.
Oh, so this is definitely in the works. It's coming.
Oh, yeah. Absolutely. They managed to do one single, the Dad Revenge single.
I have that. That single. It's on the, it's in the living room, or where did I put it? It's around here somewhere. Yeah, I have that thing. That's great. Yeah.
So we unfortunately had a sort of a, when we went away, when we left AT, we were pursuing better distribution in Europe was kind of the impetus. It wasn't really, had nothing really to do with AT itself. And we got on with Southern Records as our own label, quote unquote, Wrong Records.
Yep.
But that all went to hell, kind of got ripped off. At least in my estimation, we did. Southern was pressing and releasing a lot of our back catalog in the 2000s. And then, then we kind of fizzled and they stopped sending us any statements, but kept selling our records for another 8 years. When I approached them 5-6 years ago saying like, okay, we're done.
Yeah.
And as far as I knew, our contract was null and void because they hadn't sent us a statement in like 5 years. And I think it was done anyway, the contract. And so I was asking Allison, who was running it, can we get our artwork and our masters back? And she just never did. They're gone, as far as I know.
I had someone in
London look for them because he went through a same problem trying to get Crass and Rudimentary Peni, a bunch of stuff from them. And he had to actually go to like warehouses and find them and take them himself.
Oh no.
And he was not able to. And there was someone else who worked for Southern who said, yeah, they didn't know where anything was. So
the reissues that will appear at some point will be some sort of reproduction of.
Yeah, they all have to be recreated. I mean, every CD is a master essentially, but the artwork all has to be recreated and it's time consuming and it's all that expense again. Here's the files, go print it. It's now the expense of putting these things all back together. So it's a bit of a process. Not surprising, it's taking some time. I would have hoped that they would have been able to have a few things more out by now. I think the idea now is to get and release Wrong because it's our most popular, most recognizable record.
Yeah.
To try to come out with when this album is going to be ready, but that's going to be very soon.
When the book is ready?
Book is ready. Yeah. It's like, it would be a good synergy.
Yeah.
I've released Dead Bob and the book comes out later this year. officially, and if they could get wrong release, it'd be a good synergy of exposure. If I could get out and play live, so the idea is to play live if I can.
I hope perhaps if it's possible when the book is out, perhaps maybe we can reconvene with Jason and whoever else wants to participate. We can have another chat because
absolutely.
I would love to dig into the book and learn and be able to spread the word about it, I guess is what I'm saying. So I appreciate this, John. So if people want to learn more about Dead Bob, I assume the best place is your Bandcamp. Is that fair?
Bandcamp, yep. Instagram, Dead Bob.
Oh,
it's like dead dot underscore dot Bob. I couldn't actually get Dead Bob. And of course, I put everything up on the No Means No Facebook page as well.
Right. Okay.
That's ongoing to communicate with fans who follow it. But that's how you find out what's going on. And I just today discussing a t-shirt's going to be produced by a company called Bifocal Media down in the States. And they've been doing kind of their own one-off artist designs of No Means No imagery. And they do 300 or 500 runs and they've all been selling out.
Oh, nice.
Yeah, Bifocal Media. And I only know them through email, but Charles seems like a very nice man. And they pay us, so...
Everything about that deal sounds sweet.
Well, you know, that hasn't always happened in our lives. So.
All right. Well, we'll look out for that. Follow you on Instagram. And I urge people to check out the Bandcamp. I'll link to various things in the podcast description here. John, if we can go out on a song from this Dead Bob record, play one for our people to hear. I wonder if you can choose it and maybe explain why it came to mind.
Oh, geez. I wasn't prepared to pick a song.
I like to surprise people at the end. It's an ambush.
Well, as I always say, I know we're running out of time. It's like once you write and record and put a song out there, it's no longer yours. And and people say, what is this song about? What does this mean? It's like, well, basically, it means whatever it means to you because I don't know how you hear it and what you interpret it from, what you interpret from it. And it really doesn't matter what I was thinking when I was writing it. It only matters what you're thinking and feeling while you're listening to it.
Yeah.
So if that's a cop-out, well, then...
No, it's fine.
No, probably the opening track. Why not? Just Breathe, which is what I think we all really have to remember to do. Stop, take a breath.
It's good. It's both a nice, intense song and a yoga mantra, I think, is where
exactly.
we're at. It's a meditative mantra. All right, this
so
is
listen
just...
to it over and over and over and over again.
Don't forget to breathe, everyone. That's the moral of this story. This is Just Breathe by Dead Bob from the wonderful new record, Lifelike. John Wright, always a tremendous pleasure. You don't know this as a drummer myself, who I wanted to say, first time in my life I have a house where I can set up my drum kit in like 20-odd years as well. It's really
awesome.
Fun.
Awesome.
So I admire you for various things, various reasons, I should say, John. Not just your fire mitigation, not just your whatever, I'm just making jokes. I just want to thank you so much for making time for me, and I wish you the best of luck in the future, and I hope we talk again soon.
I hope we do, too. And thanks so much for reaching out. And we'll talk again. And keep drumming.
I will. I'll take that as an order. Thanks, John. Will do.
All right. Ciao.
Are you sinking? Are you shrinking into shadows out of sight? 'Cause I'm sinking, yeah, I'm sinking in the sand.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds. Recently, I asked Mint Mobile's legal team if big wireless companies are allowed to raise prices due to inflation. They said yes. And then when I asked if raising prices technically violates those onerous two-year contracts, they said, what the f*** are you talking about, you insane Hollywood ass f-. So to recap, we're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Imagine the softest sheets you've ever felt. Now imagine them getting even softer over time. That's what you'll feel with Bowl and Branch's organic cotton sheets. In a recent customer survey, 96% replied that Bowl and Branch sheets get softer with every wash. Start getting your best night's sleep in these sheets that get softer and softer for years to come. Try their sheets with a 30-night guarantee. Plus, get 15% off your first order at bowlandbranch.com. Code BUTTERY. Exclusions apply. See site for details.
Oh, it's always a thrill and an honor to get to speak to John Wright from No Means No. We've had many conversations over the years. I saw No Means No so many times, and then we became friendly because they kept, who's that guy? Why does that guy keep showing up? Does he want something from us? Is something wrong? What? Let's talk to him. And then they realized I liked them, and then we became friendly. So it's nice to have John Wright back on the show. This time he's appearing on the 782nd episode of Creative Control, which is part of the Entertainment One podcast network and is available just about wherever you get your podcasts. If you can't find an episode that you're looking for, or if you want to learn more about me and sign up for my monthly newsletter, please visit vishkhanna.com. You can also like Creative Control on Facebook if that's your thing. You can also follow the show on Twitter at vishcreative, or you can follow me directly on Twitter and on Instagram at vishkhanna if any of those things are your thing. Also, please visit patreon.com/creativecontrol to make a flexible monthly donation to support this donor-driven podcast. $6 American or more a month grants you access to exclusive content, things you won't get anywhere else. You get the episodes earlier than everybody else. That's a thing as well. And if you're interested in receiving a Creative Control t-shirt, I still have some sizes left in the maroon design and the yellow pizza design. So you can learn more about all of these things, what they look like, at patreon.com/creativecontrol. And if you'd like a t-shirt after you've made your donation, just message me on there and I'll get you a shirt while supplies last. Otherwise, if you don't want anything and just want to support the show, please do. patreon.com/creativecontrol. Thank you so much. Speaking of thanks again to the wonderful Alberta record store Blackbird Music, with locations in Edmonton and Calgary, Alberta, and where you can go to order things online as well via their website, blackbird.ca. Also want to thank Pizza Trocadero, The Bookshelf, and Planet Bean Coffee, three wonderful independent businesses based in Guelph, Ontario, where I used to live, and Granddad's Donuts in Hamilton, Ontario, where I never lived, but man, did I partake of some of their donuts. And all of those places provide in-kind support for the show, and I thank them for that. Oh, the thank yous never end. Thanks to Jim Guthrie for letting me use some music that he has created and loans me for this show. He's an old friend of mine and I love him very much. You can learn more about Jim at jimguthrie.org. And finally, thank you so much for listening to this conversation I had with John Wright. I hope you enjoyed it. And we'll dig into his latest project, Dead Bob, and look forward to all the No Means No wares that may be coming in the near future. And also for subscribing to this podcast or following it and telling your friends all about it and spreading the word about Creative Control. It means so much to me that you do that. So thank you. I'm going to go now. I wish you well. But I will talk to you, and I'll talk to you soon. That's what I was trying to say there, but I fumbled. All right. Goodbye for now.
Step onto the legendary clay courts of Roland Garros, where the world's best players battle it out at the French Open for a chance to win a Grand Slam title. Tennis Channel Plus is your place to watch. Stream every court from your phone or smart TV live in HD. See the action unfold as legends fight for glory and new rivalries emerge. Daily live coverage begins Monday, May 20th, with match replays on demand so you never miss a moment. From the first serve to the final point, Roland Garros promises unforgettable moments and new chapters in tennis history. Stream now with Tennis Channel Plus to be there when it happens.
Hold up. What was that? Boring. No flavor. That was as bad as those leftovers you ate all week. Keke Palmer here, and it's time to say hello to something fresh and guilt-free. HelloFresh. Jazz up dinner with pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Now that's music to my mouth. HelloFresh. Let's get this dinner party started. Discover all the delicious possibilities at HelloFresh.com.